All right, Ramblers, let's get rambling. My name is Steve, and thank you for listening to For Me, These Films Are The Deuce. Wow, it's really good to be back. I just checked, and it's 2 weeks to the day. In 2 weeks' time, it'll be exactly 1 year since I released my last podcast episode, which was casting of Heat 2 with the wonderful Lan and David from I Finally Watched podcast. And yeah, it's amazing to be back. It's been a hell of a year. I had to take some time for myself, and I just kind of got to a point where I wasn't really enjoying it anymore. I mentioned that a little bit in this episode, but I'm really, really glad to be doing it again, and really excited to be releasing this episode for the first time in a year. So thank you to anyone who's going to listen to it. It's a great episode. It's myself and Wang Ji, formerly from the Recaster 2.0 podcast, and we are recasting A Few Good Men in 2023. So I really hope you enjoy listening to For Me, These Films Are The Deuce. Please, if you're listening for the first time, please have a little look through and listen to my the back catalogue. Some great episodes in there with some very great guests. And as I say, two more time, it's amazing to be back doing this. And I'm not going to make any promises for future episodes. I've done that before, and I've let people down. So, but I can definitely say that there will be more episodes coming up. Okay, so thank you so much for listening, and hope you enjoy the episode. Let's get to it. Okay, so yes, I'm very excited to be recording again. So this is the first time doing my podcast for almost a year now. What better way to kind of restart than with talking about brilliant film A Few Good Men? And what a better way to start than with one of the biggest fans that I know of that film. I know it's in his kind of top three, top five films of all time. Wang Ji, previously of the Recasted 2.0 podcast. Wang, welcome.
Hey, thanks for having me. This is exciting. Anytime I get to talk about A Few Good Men, I'm excited. And as I was telling you offline, you know, it's cool to be your first guest getting back to it, because I know I've missed the show. I know I used to listen to it a lot. We did the Tom Cruise draft. I don't know if I think I picked A Few Good Men in the draft, actually.
You did. Yeah, I was just thinking that you did. Yeah, I think that you did pretty well off of that one. Yeah, I listened back to that episode actually the other day, and that was good. Again, just thank you so much for coming on, being the first guest after a bit of a break. Let's talk about what's kind of going on with you, because I know you've had a little bit of a break yourself. So where kind of are you at the minute with what you're up to in the kind of podcast world, really?
Yeah, for sure. So I know we kind of got away from Recasted 2.0, and I wanted to do something creative. I always have the creative juices going, and I want to do something. So I started a YouTube channel called Patriots End Zone, where I talk about the New England Patriots here in America, American football. It's my favorite team, and I used to do a weekly episode, and then after the draft, not a lot was going on, so I took a little break, but now the preseason started, so I got to get back into it. But it's about a 30-35 minute show. If you go on YouTube and check it out, very high production value. I do all kinds of graphics and overlays to make it look like an actual news, you know, podcast. I don't do a podcast of it, so you can't really listen to it unless you watch it on YouTube, but it's just something that I'm doing right now just to be creative.
Awesome, man. So it's only on YouTube, that one? Yeah,
that one's only on YouTube. Right. And obviously, if you like, I also started writing for a site called Musket Fire, which is a fan-sided blog site, and so I've been writing a lot of blogs there as well. So if you like the New England Patriots, or you're curious about them, I got you covered.
How are things kind of with them? I do enjoy NFL. I can't say I kind of know a huge amount other than outside of the Eagles, who I also don't know a huge amount about, but they're my team. But obviously it's been a bit of a transition few years with Brady going, and I know kind of you guys haven't kind of got back up to that kind of level yet, but how are things looking for this season? You got high hopes?
They look good. I do have high hopes, because you know, Bill Belichick always puts out a great defense. You know, he's a defensive mind, and every year, even when they have a bad year — last year was a bad year, but they still had a top five defense in the league — they just had horrible quarterback play. So now the idea is that they got rid of Matt Patricia, who was their offensive coordinator. He used to be a defensive coordinator, so he didn't have any experience calling offensive plays.
Right.
And they went out and they got Bill O'Brien, who used to be their offensive coordinator, was also a head coach with the Texans and then Penn State, and he was the offensive coordinator at Alabama. Mm-hmm. So they bring him in, and things are starting to look better for the offense. And as long as the offense doesn't turn the ball over, that defense is stout. They can win a lot of games.
Gotcha. Okay. So maybe a playoff run?
I'm hoping so. I don't think they win the division. I think the Buffalo Bills still win the division, but maybe get in as a wild card.
And so how about Recasted 2.0? Is anything kind of going to happen with that anytime soon?
Nothing in the works for that currently. It's something that may come back eventually because I do enjoy movies. I love movies as much as I love sports. So I may come back to it. And it's a cool idea, right? Recasting. We're going to do a little bit of it today. Mm-hmm. So I do like doing it. It's just a matter of finding the time because it is a lot of effort to get in there, record, edit, promote, you know, all that stuff. And I know that Jesse was with me for a little bit and I asked him to take on a larger load, you know, to kind of take some off of me.
Yeah.
And he really didn't want to do that. It was for him. It was just like a weekend thing. Like I just like to show up and record.
Gotcha.
And so he decided when I asked him to do more, he was like, well, I'm not going to do it. So I just started doing it on my own. You know, that was, I rebooted it a little bit. I think I did two or three episodes with guests.
Yeah.
And then even that, I was like, I'm still doing the same amount of work. I just don't have that kind of time.
No, it can. It's that thing, isn't it? It's when it's like, you know, enjoying it, it's a hobby, you're enjoying it and stuff. But when it starts to feel a bit like, this is starting to feel a little bit like work, which is kind of what was happening with me and kind of back along, I was like, oh, I'm not really kind of, the enjoyment's getting taken out of it a little bit here. Yeah, you need that kind of invigoration back again sometimes, I think. But cool, man. Yeah, no, that sounds great about the Patriots YouTube channel. So yeah, hope it goes well. And, you know, fingers crossed you'll be able to get to do something else, or even just guest on a few podcasts, you know, because it's always great to hear your opinions and on things. So yeah, cool. Okay, so as I said, it's been a year since kind of done my podcast, and obviously years a long time in any kind of walk of life, but in film, especially with kind of the cinema coming out of the pandemic years and trying to make its way again and improve. Things have been a bit crazy the last month or so. A lot of people go into the cinema with the whole Barbenheimer, hashtag Barbenheimer craze. So I was just wondering, did you have any kind of thoughts on that at all, Wayne? Did you go to see either of them? Did you get kind of caught up in it? Was it on your radar? What kind of your thoughts on that?
It was definitely on my radar. I haven't seen either film yet. And I don't understand the craze with Barbie. And this goes back to even January, because in January they came out with a list, the most anticipated films of 2023.
Yeah.
And Barbie was at the top of the list. And I couldn't wrap my head around it. I was like, why would people be interested to see a Barbie movie? Like, I don't get it. And then I saw the trailer, and the trailer didn't do anything for me. So I was like, I'm trying to understand it. And I think it's done $600 million or something like that now. And I can't. Yeah, Oppenheimer, I get. Christopher Nolan, great cast, compelling story, you know, but Barbie, I'm just completely lost. I don't get it at all.
Yeah. No, I can completely see where you're coming from. I mean, so yeah, I was just looking at it last night. So Barbie worldwide now has gone over the $1 billion mark, but Oppenheimer is $602 billion. You know, it's $602 billion, $602 million. So you know, they've both done incredibly well, and I think they've both really, in terms of box office, really pushed each other because of the counter programming of them both being released at the same time. So I think they both really kind of pushed each other to kind of do even better. I know I'm a bit of a slave to trends, so I went and watched both of them on the same day in the opening weekend. With Barbie, I completely understand what you're saying. I was quite intrigued to watch it because I read a lot about it. Greta Gerwig, the director, isn't a kind of you know, she's a bit of a auteur. She's kind of, you know, come from kind of indie filmmaking into making a big studio film like that. So I know it was going to be slightly different, and it wasn't just literally going to be this is a Barbie film. There's going to be other things to it. And Christopher Nolan, his last couple of films, I started watching Dunkirk, and I just couldn't, I just really couldn't get into it. I think I lasted about maybe 45 minutes or so. I need to give it another try. Tenet didn't really interest me. I didn't watch that. But this was really just from the trailer and, like you say, the cast. It was. I was definitely going to see it opening weekend anyway. So I thought, why not see the two of them?
Tenet was something that I enjoyed, Tenet, and I was excited to see it. It didn't live up to the hype in my mind. But I'm a time travel junkie. So yeah. I don't care if it's Back to the Future or Interstellar or whatever. If it's a time travel movie, I'm in, you know? And
yeah.
I thought, oh, cool. And it wasn't exactly what I thought it was going to be, but it was okay.
Oh, cool. Yeah. But I'd recommend if you,
you know, if you get a chance to go and see Oppenheimer in the cinema before it goes out, definitely do it. I watched it on an IMAX, so I've seen it twice now. I saw it on our local IMAX screen, and it was, yeah, it's pretty incredible. So yeah, any plan? Is your, because you've got a daughter, Wayne, haven't you? Is she old enough to see Barbie? She got any interest in seeing it? Or
yeah, she just turned 15 this year, and oh, okay. She went and saw it with some of her friends. And she enjoyed it. She was telling me the plot and like what's going on. And again, from the trailer and from what she's telling me and what other people have told me that I've seen it, I was like, okay, so it's basically Trolls, but with a couple of pop culture jokes on it.
I suppose so. Yeah, in a way. I hadn't really thought about it like that. But yeah, you could do. I kind of assumed not to give anything away, but maybe just a hint about the recast that we're going to do. I kind of thought maybe you had seen it just because there's a one of your recasts has maybe got a bit of a link there to Barbie. So I wondered if you did see it. But no, fair enough. Cool. Okay. No, that's great. The reason we are here today is we're going to do a recasted of a 2023 recasted of A Few Good Men. So yeah, let's get down to it. So for anyone who doesn't know, which I'm sure they will, because it's a very, very popular film. A Few Good Men was released in December 1992. It was a huge hit at the time, so it had a budget of between $33 and $40 million, and it made a box office of $243 million. The amount of money it's probably made on kind of afterwards from being on TV and DVDs and everything like that is probably, you know, it's maybe probably doubled that, I'd imagine. It was nominated for 4 Oscars at the time, no wins. And on IMDb, I was quite surprised by how low these ratings were, actually. On IMDb, the rating is 7.7 and it's 84% on Rotten Tomatoes, which really doesn't mean anything, but I was just a little bit surprised at kind of how low those ones were.
Those are a lot of critics too, and I always say that critics have, you know, something for brains. That's not a nice word, and I don't really love critics. So when you look at the audience score, I think on Rotten Tomatoes, I think it's like 93 or 94%. I mean, the audience gets it.
Yeah, definitely. So yeah, again, Wayne, I said earlier, I know it's in your kind of top, definitely in your top five. What is it kind of about it that you kind of enjoy so much? I suppose
I love the pacing. The pacing's really great of it. You never feel bored. You don't feel like there's ever slow parts in it. The cast is phenomenal. I mean, we're going to talk about each of the people who originally played the characters, but it's a star-studded cast, and every one of them lives up to their name. I mean, they all put out great performances, and the story's compelling. Again, it's a court case. I mean, who doesn't love a good court case, you know?
Yeah, so, I love a courtroom drama, definitely.
And Tom Cruise, this is, like, to me, maybe my favorite Tom Cruise performance, because he's not crazy Tom Cruise yet, you know, and he is a really good actor, and so he kind of plays himself a little bit, but he also has those characters that balance him out perfectly. Yep. And of course, it's directed by Rob Reiner, who my number one or number two all-time favorite movie is The Princess Bride, another Rob Reiner directed film, so you can't miss with him.
No, of course not. So yeah, I was going to say, yeah, as Wayne just said, directed by Rob Reiner and written by Aaron Sorkin. So this was originally a play written by Aaron Sorkin and then developed for the screen by him as well. And you can tell as well, you know, it's got the kind of punchy dialogue. It's got the kind of quick paced dialogue too. I completely agree. I was shocked actually to see that it's almost 2 hours and 20 minutes long. I never thought it was that. I always kind of think of it as like a, you know, less than 2 hour long film, because it does. It just kind of skips by. But yeah, just great casting all around. The amount of people I've said to, oh, I'm doing the recasting of A Few Good Men, and just been like, well, you can't do that. Who can play the Jack Nicholson part other than Jack Nicholson? I'm like, I'm not saying I'm going to make the film. I'm just saying, just suggesting, you know. So yeah, please don't, you know, Hollywood, if you're listening, please don't remake A Few Good Men, because it can't be done. But yeah, no, I'd like it. There's so many great scenes in it as well that you can pick out and kind of rewatch. Everything with Jack Nicholson in obviously is fantastic. So so yeah, no, I really love this film as well.
I would recommend too that people check out a YouTube clip. So obviously Kevin Pollak's in it, we'll talk about him, but he's a great impressionist. He does a lot of impressions, and he told a story I watched where he was talking about, you know, working with Rob Reiner. He said Rob Reiner is a very excited director and he's very hands-on, and they said actors don't like notes about their performance. Like, oh, you could do this better. Like that rubs them the wrong way. Like they're doing it their way. And Rob Reiner will just give you a lot of notes, not to be disrespectful, but because he's excited about what he's seeing.
Yeah.
And so they said that, you know, Tom Cruise, Demi Moore, Kevin Pollak, he said, we were all on the set. We were used to him doing that. It was fine. It was a little jarring at first. He goes, but then, you know, Jack comes on the set. And of course, you know, we're like, oh, let's see how he reacts, you know, to this. And he goes, the first scene we shoot is the courtroom scene. He's doing his soliloquy and he's great. And everyone's like, wow, he's really great. And then Rob goes over and he's like, oh, that was really great. Here's some things I was thinking, you know, and he goes, and Jack's face is like, what is going on? And he goes, so like Rob finishes and Jack just says, thanks, Robbie. Guess I'm not there yet.
I think in the same thing, I think it was on the same shoot as well. You might have read this as well, but for every, so he obviously had to do his long speech, obviously being filmed, and then they had to do the reaction shots of everybody as well. So they had to do that, you know, quite a few times. And they said that apparently Jack Nicholson insisted on being there and saying the lines every single time, and not just saying it, but acting it every single time. So it's like, you know, 10, 12 takes and stuff. And apparently Rob Reiner was kind of like, oh, I'm a little bit worried. He's going to kind of, you know, he's going to burn himself out. It's not going to have the same impact. So he subtly said to Jack, he's like, oh, you know, do you think you can maybe, you know, you don't have to do it and everything. You know, we can just kind of, someone can just read it for you just so you don't get burnt out. And he said something along the line, my impression probably won't be as good as yours, but it's like, Rob, you don't understand. I love to act. So yeah, it's great for those kind of stories as well. Brilliant. So let's get into it, shall we?
Sure.
Fantastic. Okay. So I've taken the format from Recaster 2.0. So what Wayne and Jesse always did was they took it from not the least important, but maybe the character with the least amount of screen time, and then went through to the lead. So we'll start off with Private First Class Loudon Downey, who was played by James Marshall in the original film, and he was 25 years old. He was the character who, it was him and him and Harold Dawson who were accused of murdering Santiago. And he's very much a kind of, you know, younger, looks up to Harold Dawson. In the film, he is, he seems quite uneducated. He apparently is a very good Marine, but quite uneducated, always looking up to Harold, doesn't really understand what's going on in the courtroom. Very kind of, doesn't know what's happening, quite childlike. So with this one, I went for an actress called Willa Fitzgerald. I've changed both Dawson and Downey to female characters, just to give kind of maybe a different spin on it there. And Willa Fitzgerald, I picked her because, you know, this isn't much of a, it's not a huge role. Downey gets a couple of scenes where he is on screen quite a bit and raises his voice a little bit towards the end. Not a huge amount going on. Harold Dawson is much the kind of more standout character, but I picked her because she's just a really good actress. I haven't really seen her in a lot else. I've seen her in the TV show Scream. I thought she was great in that. That wasn't the best kind of TV show in the world, but she really stood out in it. She was in a TV adaptation of Little Women. She was great in that as well. And just compared to the actress I've chosen to play Dawson, I think she can just have that kind of, she's a little bit smaller physically, maybe acting wise as well. The other actress can maybe kind of, you know, do those bigger things, someone that she can look up to, but I think that she can kind of give a little bit more weight to the situation, and can just play it very well, tug on your heartstrings when it's needed to. So that's Willa Fitzgerald. She's 32 years old, and film wise you might know her from The Goldfinch, 18 and a half, and Savage Salvation, which none of them I've seen. Don't know what the films are like, but that's, if you want to see her in any films, it's those. But I've seen her from Scream, the TV show, and Little Women. Wayne, who did you go for?
Yeah, well, first of all, I gotta say, I really liked what you did here, kind of switching it up to having the female characters, obviously maybe the female side of the base, you know, because I don't know, they separate the men and the women on the Marine bases. And I like that because obviously if you've listened to our show, I like to really bring a lot of diversity to the characters. I've recasted people that, you know, you wouldn't think of normally because they don't fit who the person was initially. So I do like this particular spin on it. And I like her as an actress. I think this is a good pick. Like you said, Downey is kind of like a farm kid. He's not really experienced life. He's gone right from being on a farm to being in the military. And the only thing I've really seen her in was the Jack Reacher TV show. She was a police officer, and I thought she was great. And I think that she would do really well as this role. Like you said, she's going to be the more quiet of the two of them. And this kind of the follower, and I think that she would fit that role really well. So I liked that. For my character, I went with Zolo Maraduena, who, if you've seen the show Cobra Kai, he's Miguel. He's the main character. What I liked about him, again, he's very quiet, soft-spoken. Even as he gets a bigger role as the show has continued in multiple seasons, he's still kind of the quiet kid. And I thought that he would play that quiet, downy role really well. Obviously, he's gotten kind of beefed up to play the Blue Beetle, which I'm not excited to see, but at least now he looks like a Marine, so we can kind of put him into that Marine outfit, and he fits.
I thought that was a great pick. When I saw the name, I was like, I didn't recognize it at all, but then when I looked into him, oh, great, it's the guy from Cobra Kai, who's, yeah, he's excellent in that. And then, yeah, again, I saw he was going to be in the Blue Beetle as well. Yeah, I no complaints here at all. I think it's a really good pick. I think he's... can kind of pull on your heartstrings. You can bring about sympathy and empathy from people. Definitely pass as a Marine as well. No problems at all. I think there's probably a couple picks as we get a bit further on. We'll have maybe a little bit more criticism for each other, but I think on these early ones, I think it's definitely fine. So I thought that was a good pick as well. Superb. So the next one we have is Lance Corporal Harold Dawson. Who was originally played by Wolfgang Bodison, who was 26 years old at the time. Just a quick thing on Wolfgang Bodison, not an actor, was when he auditioned for this film. So I was reading about him. So he came out of university, had aspirations to be a director and a screenwriter, no aspiration to be an actor at all. Worked in kind of like the film store at Columbia, worked for Castle Rock, eventually worked his way up to being the assistant of Rob Reiner, and then that's how he got this role. They were finding it difficult to cast someone for Harold Dawson, which I find surprising because they had Cuba Gooding Jr. in the film in like a very small role as one of the Marines. I thought he would have been perfect for it at the time, but that's by the by. Got kind of put into this film, first ever acting role, and to be completely honest, I think he kind of blew it out of the water. Really, he's very serious in it. He plays the Marine really, really well. You kind of buy it. He's big, you can see people looking up to him. He maybe goes for it, maybe just an extra too much when he's screaming in Tom Cruise's face, but generally I thought he was great. So in this role, as I said, I picked two female actors to play Downey and Dawson, and so for Dawson I have gone for Zoe Kravitz. Sheila, but you've seen her from After Earth, Mad Max Fury Road, the Divergent films. Her most recent thing was Kimmy, again, which I haven't seen. But the thing that I know her from most is is playing Catwoman in the most recent version, The Batman. She can do the physical side of things. She's a great actress. She's you can easily take her as a leader. You can easily take her as someone who would take someone under the wing in The Batman. I don't know if it's her girlfriend or someone she's looking after is kidnapped, and she's the one who's kind of looking after and going to get her back. She's got that kind of leader quality to her, and she can do that thing where she can do the face to face with whoever the male actor is who's going to play Daniel Caffey as well. So she's kind of just what came to mind straight away, and I thought it kind of fit really well, especially with the chemistry that she could have with Willa Fitzgerald as well as the kind of more senior person. So I went for Zoe Kravitz for the Dawson character.
Yeah, and I think that's a great pick as well. Like you said, she definitely seems more like leadership. She's a very strong woman, mm-hmm. and I think that. We have Joe Galloway, which we'll touch on later. She's a very strong character. So I think having more strong women in the film is definitely a positive. And I think Zoe Kravitz, if I was to criticize, which I'm not necessarily, but if I was, it would just be that obviously, like you said, Marshall and Bodison were really not anyone, when they did this film.
Yeah.
Zoe Kravitz has a little bit of clout behind her, mm-hmm. And so I think that would be the only thing was like, would she take a role this small? would be my only thing. But if she does, she's awesome for it. I think she's a superstar. I think she's going to be a megastar down the road. So I think that she'd crush this role.
Yeah.
I went with a little lesser known guy. I mean, he's been in some TV shows. I went with Jordan Calloway, who was in Drumline 2, if anyone saw that. And he was also in Riverdale, is probably what he's most known for. A big, jacked guy. You know, he looks like Carol Dawson, where he's going to tower over Caffey. He's going to tower over Marshall. And even if you didn't respect him as a soldier, you're going to be intimidated by him as a soldier. He's, to me, he looks like the textbook classic Marine.
Gotcha. Okay. I don't really have much to say on this one because I've not seen him in anything. But yeah, I mean, certainly just from aesthetically, certainly looks the part. So yeah, no complaints here. And as you said, I completely understand what you're saying about Zoe Kravitz and the size of the roles. You know, I'm sure with any type of remake of A Few Good Men, obviously I know we're not talking about that. We're just talking about people to fit in the film as it is. But any type of remake, you know, they build up certain parts and stuff, and obviously that could be one that they do throw a little bit more kind of shade on the character. But yeah, no, I think first four picks between us, I think, have been pretty good. Lovely. So yeah, no complaints there at all. So now we're going to go into Lieutenant Sam Weinberg, who was originally played by Kevin Pollak in A Few Good Men. And Kevin Pollak, man, he was 35 years old when he did this part. Has Kevin Pollak always looked like he's 40, 45? You know, he's always had a bit of a, he's always looked older, I think, than he actually is. So yeah, Kevin Pollak played this part. Sam Weinberg is kind of the administrative assistant to Caffey and to Galloway on the case. He's a very moral guy. You know, he doesn't agree at all that these guys should be found innocent for what they did. He said, you know, he's always standing up for Santiago and that he was bullied. He's a dad. He's kind of preoccupied by that as well. And it's kind of just, and him and Joe Galloway have a bit of a kind of head-to-head relationship as well. Don't really get on that well. But at the end of the day, it's quite a subservient role. You know, he's always been kind of told what to do and saying, you know, I have no responsibility here whatsoever. So I like the idea of a comedian playing the part, because it seems like one of those parts that you can add a little bit of comedy into with the kind of sarcastic delivery of lines and kind of one-off lines. So I went with I wanted to find a comedian or a comic actor to play this part, and where I landed was Ed Helms from Evan Almighty, We're the Millers, Coffee and Cream, again something I haven't seen, but maybe most famous from being in the Hangover films. He plays I can't remember his character's name, but he plays the dentist, Stu. I could just kind of see it when I landed on him. I was like, he can have a little bit of a slightly geeky look to him. Not that Kevin Pollak is geeky, but you know, bookwormish. You can imagine him being really good at research and admin and prepping a client or a witness, sorry. And and I could just see him being subservient to the other other actors in the film as well. That was kind of the main reason I went for Ed Helms for that role.
Yeah, I'll say this is actually one of the choices I didn't love, only because for me, everything I've seen Ed Helms in, whether it was Hangover or the Vacation movies where he's an adult Rusty, or The American Office, he plays Andy Bernard,
yep,
is he's kind of a goofy, weird guy. Like, I don't see him ever really play serious. And to me, Sam was really serious. He has some quips in it, but you have to remember that Sam was put on the case to kind of ground Caffey, because if you don't, Caffey can get way off into left field. So he needed some sort of like a leash, like a babysitter. And so Sam's like, I have no responsibility in the case. I'm just here to babysit Caffey. And I can't picture Ed Helms like being a babysitter of our Caffey. He's the one that needs to be babysat, you know? So that was my only criticism of it.
I think, no, and that's understandable, definitely, from what he's been in before. I think maybe, he's 49 years old now, Ed Helms, and kind of been around a long time, has maybe tried taking a step into slightly more serious things now and then. Maybe they haven't been that successful, but I don't know, I could just see him being that kind of just calm, not kind of too goofy or anything off the wall, being that kind of more leveling presence, I suppose. But I definitely obviously understand what you're saying. But yeah, no, I think he could do it.
So I went with a little bit more of a serious actor, I guess, which is, I know we mentioned the Barbie movie, and I went with Simu Liao, who was, I think, Asian Ken in the Barbie movie. But he's also more known for being Shang-Chi in the Marvel Shang-Chi movie. And what I like about him, again, like Kevin Pollak, he can be funny. He actually, when you watch Shang-Chi, he has a lot of funny kind of lines, but he's also very serious as a character. So I like that. I felt like he would be a good grounding force for Kaffee. And obviously we'll get into who we picked for Kaffee later. But if Kaffee's going to be the goofball playing softball when he should be studying the case, you know, I think Simu Liao is a guy who's going to be like, hey, I'm going to reel you back in so we can focus on this case.
Yeah. Now with this one, so this was the one, obviously, that's why I assume maybe you'd seen it, seen Barbie, that's maybe potentially why you picked him, but obviously you've seen him in other things. So I can only go by seeing him in Barbie. That's the only thing I've seen him in. So I was a little bit surprised on this one for a couple of reasons. A, similar reason to you said about Zoe Kravitz. I think it's a much smaller role. I thought, and it's not really a standout role either. I could see him more as a Jack Ross, you know, the Kevin Bacon character, just from what I've seen him doing, because he has to play quite a calm. There's nothing really too showy about that role, and he seems like an actor, certainly from, again, seeing him in Barbie, maybe not a showy actor, but he likes to, you know, he wants something to make him stand out as an actor. Maybe it's a slightly weaker character than maybe he might want to play, especially if he's played, like, you know, a Marvel superhero and you know, the Ken that goes against Ryan Gosling's Ken. But yeah, I mean, he seemed really good. I'm sure he could definitely do it, but just maybe might just be better in it in another role, possibly. Do you know what I mean by that? Is that going to make sense?
Yeah, no, I think that's fair. I think that, obviously, like you said, being the lead in a Marvel superhero movie where you're the superhero, that's kind of a big, big role. And doing Barbie, which is now a $1 billion movie, you know, kind of, he's got these two roles behind him. I'm going to say, well, he's just jumping at the chance to work with Aaron Sorkin. and there's really no shortage of lines. Like, Sam has a lot of really great lines in this film. Mm-hmm. So it's not like he's just Downey, or, you know, we're getting into some of the guys who are actually going to have a lot of screen time. So I think he'd be good.
Cool. Yeah. Awesome, man. Ideal. Okay. So, that is the Lieutenant Weinberg. So now we're going to go for First Lieutenant Jonathan Kendrick, who was originally played by Kiefer Sutherland in the original film. He's 26 years old at the time. So this is a guy who was in charge of the platoon, the team that that Downey and Dawson were in, and gave the order to them from Jessup down to the guys to give the code red to Santiago. In it, he's this, you know, looks like he's just walked off a kind of, you know, alt-right KKK kind of rally or something. Skinhead, not very nice chap at all. Doesn't like Daniel Kaffee. Doesn't really like anyone, I don't think, apart from Jack Nicholson in the film. Just a very, very kind of unpleasant character, I think. A bit of a, you know, said he only believes in the, only has two books next to his bed, the Bible and the operating code for Guantanamo Bay. So yeah, he's passionate about being a Marine, very passionate about scripture, and very black and white kind of character. So for this one, I went with Zachary Montgomery, I think that's how you pronounce his first name, who he was in Stranger Things, most famously for, he played Billy. And he was also in Power Rangers. I think he played one of the lead roles in Power Rangers, a film called The Broken Hearts Gallery, and he was also in Elvis, a short, small part in Elvis, but was also very good in that. I picked him because I think that this would be perfect for him, in that it's very similar to his role, especially in the first series that he was in, Stranger Things. Very, very similar kind of character to that, but he can step it up, throw a bit few more acting chops into it, and maybe kind of show a bit of diversity in how good an actor he is, because I think he's a very good actor. And also, as well, if you ever look it up on YouTube, which you can do, his audition for Billy in Stranger Things is, he did a couple of things from Stand By Me, playing the doing some of the role the some of the scenes that Kiefer Sutherland did in Stand By Me. And he's not doing an impression of Kiefer Sutherland at all, but he gets the whole thing, he gets the manner. You know, he can play that kind of scary part. You know, he's quite a big guy, quite built. So yeah, I just think he would fit into this role really well. So that's Dacre Montgomery. He's 28 years old, and yeah, I think he could play the Jonathan Kendrick part.
Yeah, I think this is a great pick. I think that, you know, me and Jesse, I think when we were doing Back to the Future, had picked Dacre Montgomery to play Biff, right? And it's like, because he has that kind of dislikable quality about him. And in a way, I never like to typecast people into those types of roles because you want to see them branch out. But also, Kiefer Sutherland played that kind of role kind of early on, where there was Lost Boys, Stand By Me. He was always kind of the jerk, unlikable character. So it makes sense that he would fit perfectly into this role. I have really no issue with it. I think he would absolutely crush the role, personally. I went with somebody a little bit older. I went with Wyatt Russell, who is Kurt Russell's son. And people might know him from Falcon and the Winter Soldier. He was the new Captain America. And, you know, again, so kind of a Marine in that movie or in that TV show. And then obviously he was in a movie called Goon 2. If you've seen Goon or Goon 2, that has Sean William Scott, I think, is a hockey player. And so he's in Goon 2 as like the goon. And again, like you said, just needed that kind of Southern guy who maybe seems a little racist, even though he never really says anything racist. He's just like, I bet this guy's a racist, you know, and he just seems like a jerk. And I think Wyatt Russell hits all those marks. And kind of on a fun note, we had recorded a recasted episode, which never aired, where we recasted A Time to Kill. And I had recasted Wyatt Russell as the Kiefer Sutherland role in that. So I'm going to take him for this one here.
Yeah, I thought this was a great great pick as well. He's always been a that guy for me. I've seen him in so many things and just kind of never knew his name or who he was. In fact, in doing the research for this, that's first how I found out he was Kurt Russell's son. I didn't even know that. But yeah, I'd seen him in a lot of things, and he'd always stood out to me. You know, I saw him in I think it was in 22 Jump Street. I saw him in, I think it was This Is 40 as well. He's only got small parts in both of them, but he really kind of just stands out with his look and his kind of mannerisms. And yeah, I don't have any problems with this. Maybe just a little bit on the older side. I don't think that's a problem. I don't think that's an issue with that. I don't think Kiefer Sutherland looked, I think he looked older than 26 when he played it. But yeah, no, I thought this was great. A kind of something he could do really well, a size of a role that would really suit him. So yeah, I know I thought that was almost perfect, definitely. Nice. Cool, okay, all good so far. So the next one we have is Captain Smiling Jack Ross, who was originally played by Kevin Bacon, who was 34 years old, and was on the receipt of my favourite line from the film, "You're a lousy fucking softball player, Jack!" Other than "You can't handle the truth." And yeah, so he is friends with Daniel Caffey, but is representing the Marines. So he's kind of the prosecution of Downey and Dawson. So they're up against each other. Funny role, because he is kind of, he's not really a bad guy in it. He's representing the bad guys. But he is a bit of an antagonist towards Daniel Caffey, Tom Cruise's role, but they are still friends as well. And yeah, kind of comes around at the end, and you know, he's kind of a good person. Probably he's kind of doing his job, kind of representing the Marines. So the person I picked for this role was Jonathan Groff, who is 38 years old, probably most famous for being in the TV show Mindhunter. He's a song and dance man as well, so I'm sure Wayne picked him for something in a previous episode. He can maybe remind me what that was in a minute. But I think he was also in the stage shows of Hamilton, and he's also been in American Sniper, Matrix, Resurrections, and Knock at the Cabin. The reason that I picked him is because, and it's mainly for, the main thing I've seen him in is Mindhunter. He can play in that, he plays quite a good character, a good person, moral person, trying to do a good thing, but he's also, he can be a bit smarmy, he can be a little bit unlikable. It's often people kind of, you know, putting him in his place because he's kind of going to go in, going off and doing his own thing. Yeah, so he's a smart guy, but he kind of knows it. He can rub people up the wrong way. Got a little bit of smarminess to him, but he is kind of likable, and you know he's kind of good under everything at the same time. So I thought that just kind of those kind of traits could really go into this role. With the song and dance routines as well, he's obviously Kevin Bacon plays a lot of basketball in the film, so looks quite fit in the film. Jonathan Groff could kind of do that as well. And yeah, I think there'd be good chemistry between him and the person I've chosen to play, Daniel Caffey, as well, for those little kind of confrontational moments. So yeah, that's Jonathan Groff for the Jack Ross character for me.
Yeah, it's another pick I really like. I think that, you know, obviously I love Jonathan Groff in Hamilton because Hamilton is my favorite musical. I can't talk about it enough. He plays King George. And I loved him in The Matrix. I thought, even though he was Agent Smith, and I kind of missed Hugo Weaving there in that role, yeah. I did like Jonathan Groff in that line. And I think this is a great pick, is because I do think that Ross doesn't have any characteristics that stand out. He's not overly aggressive. He's not bad. He's also not good. Like you said, he's just kind of like there. Yeah. And he's good at being there, you know, and I feel like that's what Jonathan Groff is great at. Because when you say, what is Jonathan Groff's biggest characteristic? You couldn't name anything. He's yeah. just a good actor. And I think that's where it fits perfectly. I think that Jonathan Groff basically is Captain Ross. So I thought it was a great pick. I liked it a lot.
Awesome. Thank you, man. Yeah, good kind of foil for things. You know, you can bring things out of other actors, I thought. But yeah, thank you very much. Yeah. Wayne, what did you cast him in before? Because I'm sure you did cast him in something.
I cast him as Wesley in The Princess Bride.
Yes, that was it. Brilliant. Okay, cool. Thanks, man.
And for my Captain Ross, I went with John Boyega, who I think people would notice him as Finn from the Star Wars, the most recent three Star Wars films. And I recognize him, obviously, from Detroit. He's done a lot of things. Again, what I like about John Boyega, he might be a little bit more of an intense actor than Jonathan Groff and even Kevin Bacon. But I do like that, for me, he's the kind of guy who can just go there, do his job, you know, and again, I think he just do a good job. Again, it's not a role that really requires anything outlandish, and I think that he fits the bill.
I think it's really good. I think he's got a energy to him as an actor that I think fits into it really well. I think he can, yeah, he's, you know, he can be lighthearted, he can be intense. I don't think there's anything wrong with that one at all. I think as an actor, he's someone that, I think we talked about it because I think I cast him in The Shawshank Redemption when we did that together, and he just, the Star Wars thing, I think really he felt quite let down by it. I know, I think maybe he was sold to that character would be a lot more important in those films than he ended up being, not that important at all. So I think, you know, he's an actor as well who'd like to do like kind of character stuff and really kind of build his way back up. I think this kind of role would be perfect for that. No issues there at all. So now we're going to go on to cast Lieutenant Colonel Matthew Markinson, not Kendrick, who was originally played by J.T. Walsh in the film. He was 49 years old at the time. So Markinson is kind of just, I think, one rank below, or just a couple of ranks below Colonel Jessup in the film. So kind of like second in command of Guantanamo Bay, which Jessup kind of likes to remind Markinson of in the film. So he isn't in the film very much at all, but when he is, he really does stand out. The camera cuts to him quite a lot for reactions. You can read a lot on his face and in his eyes. J.T. Walsh, I think, was a fantastic actor, kind of died very, very young. I think he was only in his kind of early 50s, I think, when he passed away. So he was a great actor. And yeah, he's got a few moments in here. So he's the person that told Jessup that Santiago should be transferred off the base, not that he should be kept there and punished, given a code red. He goes missing after they go down to Guantanamo Bay and meet with everybody. He ends up in Tom Cruise's car, and they want to put him on the stand to say that he was never going to be transferred off the base. But he ends up putting a gun in his mouth, and after he writes a letter to Santiago's mum and dad. Just a very important role in the film, brilliantly acted by J.T. Walsh. And the character is, he's got a softness to him, and he's got a I want to do the right thing characteristic about him. And he's kind of, again, it's similar to Ross, where he's kind of, you know, he's on the bad guy's side, but he's not a bad guy really himself. You seem like he's a person who wants to do the right thing, but can't or won't because of the trouble he might get into. Very complex character, obviously. So I went with Brendan Fraser for this one. 54 years old. Know him from so many films: Airheads, George of the Jungle, the Mummy films, and also Crash, and also more recently The Whale, which he made his huge comeback and won an Oscar for. And yeah, I kind of just landed on Brendan Fraser straight away, really. I think he was obviously more of an action star back in the day, but you know, he's a really good actor. And I think, I haven't seen The Whale, but from the bits I've seen of that, and just him as a person, I think comes through in his acting roles. He's just a kind of, he just comes across like a really, really nice guy. And I think he can have that thing where he could play a position of authority, but have a sensitive side to him, someone who's can be kind of talked down to, and maybe someone who can maybe dominate him a little bit in the Jessup role, but at the same time he can kind of quietly undermine that. So yeah, I just think he can fit in that role of JT, that JT Walsh played so well, I think, in the original film. So, and I think he'd have good chemistry with the person that I've picked to play Jessup as well. So so yeah, that's why I've gone for Brendan Fraser.
I actually really liked this particular pick, but there are things I didn't like about it. So first of all, I gotta say thank you for saying the things you did about JT Walsh, because he's one of my all-time favorite actors. And if you are an aspiring actor, you need to study JT Walsh, because that guy never turned in anything other than an A+ performance. And I don't care if it was in Blue Chips or Pleasantville or this movie, The Negotiator, right? It didn't matter what role he was in. He was always kind of a supporting role, never the lead, but yeah, always 100% genius. And I actually had a chance to talk with an actor named Silk Kozart, who was in the movie Blue Chips with JT Walsh and Nick Nolte. Mm-hmm. And I was talking with Silk, and I said, you know, I know you didn't have any scenes with JT Walsh in the film, but were you ever on set with him? Did you get a chance to see him work? And he said, he goes, that guy was just a genius as an actor. He was amazing.
Yeah.
So love JT Walsh.
Definitely. No, I completely agree. Breakdown, I think, is one of the most underrated films and one of the most underrated performances, that he just like villainous, scary, but never seemed to do a lot, but it could just kind of, you know, emote so much. So yeah, no, big fan of JT Walsh.
And with Brendan Fraser, I think obviously he can do drama. We've seen With Honors, we've seen, you know, School Ties. You know, we know he can do drama. Crash, you know, which was an Academy nominated award. He won the award for I think The Whale.
Yeah.
the thing that I felt like was just didn't fit for me is I understand what you're trying to do with him, because yes, Markinson does seem to be the more righteous of the two guys. Is Brendan Fraser as an adult to me now seems to have a little bit of a childlike quality to him.
Okay.
That I feel like doesn't fit being a Guantanamo Bay Marine. You know, at least, you know, Markinson, yes, he wants to do the right thing, but he seems also stern, you know, like he would, you know, whereas Brendan Fraser seems a little playful. Like I could picture him being more like Jack Ross, where he's a Marine on a base where they don't take it so seriously and he plays basketball and softball, you know. But I can't picture Brendan Fraser as being an intense Marine in Guantanamo Bay. That was my only
question.
Criticism
with you.
So I went with somebody who's a little bit more gruff and a little bit more intense, a gladiator, if you will. And I went with Russell Crowe, who I think obviously turns in dramatic performances all the time. He was Robin Hood. He was in Gladiator. He is a little bit tubby in the new Thor movie, but we got to get him back into shape to play this role.
Not just in that. He's been a little bit tubby for the last 10 or 15 years, I think.
But I feel like he brings that kind of marine intensity to also kind of play, like, not so intense that he's in charge, but enough that he could be the second guy in command.
Similar to you, I like and don't like this pick. I don't like it because he's a heavyweight actor, you know, and I think of the two more kind of supporting roles of Markinson and Jessup, I think he's much more better suited to the Jessup role. I can't see him being, he's just not an actor I could see being kind of like undermined and kind of dominated in a way like Nicholson does at the start of the film to him. On the other hand, however, I can see him playing a quieter role, you know, one that's maybe not as kind of, you know, big and brash as he maybe he's more well known for, and one of this size as well, like a good, really good supporting role. I just think in the relationship, I just think it's just the wrong one for him. I think he's much more of a Markinson than much more of a Jessup than a Markinson. But other than that, I couldn't quite see him playing that, but for the type of, I could see where you're going with it, but yeah, just for that exact role, not for me, but I get what you're saying. And I get what you're saying about Brendan Fraser as well. I just think, Oscar winning actor now. I think, you know, I think he could do most things. But yeah, I can see what you're saying about the kind of childlike quality about him. These are maybe the roles now where we start to have a few issues with each other, but we'll see what happens. That's Lieutenant Commander Joe Galloway. So originally played by Demi Moore in the film, and she was 30 years old at the time. Demi Moore, kind of behind the scenes thing, something that I heard is that she, you know, she was really a rising and not just rising, a big star at the time, and she dropped her normal asking price for film by, I think, about $1 million to play this part, because she wanted it so badly. I think, you know, it's that more of a maybe to try and show off her acting chops a little bit more than her other chops that she showed off in her other films. She really wanted this role. She gets a lot of criticism for this one, but I think she plays it pretty well. You know, there's a few parts where you think, oh, maybe a better actress would be good here. But I think generally she plays it pretty well. She does the Sorkin dialogue pretty well, I think. And even though she doesn't have almost any sexual chemistry with Tom Cruise, I think their relationship is still pretty good in it. So she plays, yeah, Lieutenant Commander Joe Galloway, who at the start of the film wants to be the person solely in charge of representing Dawson and Downey in the court case, and then ends up being the assigned to Downey by his Aunt Jenny. But Tom Cruise is still the lead counselor in the case. So her Weinberg and Kathy all work together on trying to defend Dawson and Downey. She is she's higher ranked than Daniel Caffey, so, and he's quite, you know, he kind of rubs her up the wrong way a little bit at the start of the film. So they have a bit of a contentious relationship at the start, but start to kind of, you know, get some respect towards each other. She's the one who's quite ballsy at the start in pushing Colonel Jessup, and knowing that something had gone wrong that shouldn't have gone wrong down at Guantanamo Bay. So very kind of strong character in a lot of ways. So for this one, I went with Anna Kendrick, who is 38 years old, unbelievably, and I'm sure recognized from the loads of things, but the Twilight films, the Pitch Perfect films, Up in the Air, a really good performance in A Simple Favor with Blake Lively, really good film on Netflix. And so the reason I picked Anna Kendrick was just because I think this is just, you know, you got Demi Moore right here, and then you got Anna Kendrick just above that, you know, kind of head and shoulders above that. She could do Sorkin dialogue really well. She can, even though she's tiny, you know, I haven't seen Up in the Air, but I know in that she plays quite a feisty character. She can stand up to people. She would have great chemistry, probably a bit more of sexual chemistry with the person I've picked to play Kathy. She can talk quick. She's smart. She can maybe add a little bit more to the slightly comedic lines, not that she gets a lot, but the bit when she's asking Kathy out on a date, you could see that as being kind of, you know, a bit more playful. I just think she takes this role and just takes it to the next level, to potentially a kind of, you know, best supporting actress type level of a role, which maybe it should be, to be honest. And if you were going to do this nowadays, and say if you were going to make Joe Galloway the main character, you know, kind of like the Kathy character, and Kathy the more supporting. I could easily see Anna Kendrick being the kind of the lead in this, as like kind of Danielle Kathy or something. I think she's a great actress, and I think she could really do a lot with this part. So yeah, that's why I went for Anna Kendrick for this one.
Yeah, I had no issues with this pick either. Like you said, Joe Galloway, very strong female presence in the film. She obviously takes a much stronger role early on and then kind of takes a backseat later. But I think that has to do with her trial and experience. Like, Kathy's experienced in handling trial stuff. She's more of like a technical person, paperwork, you know, crossing the T's, dotting the I's, you know, protocols, all that kind of stuff. She's not used to actually being in charge of a person and trying them or protecting, yeah, defending them. So even though Kathy hasn't had experience in the courtroom, he has a lot of experience defending defendants. And so I think that he's the more experienced one, so she takes the back seat there. And yeah, I think that Anna Kendrick is perfect for that. I think that she could definitely come on strong in the very beginning. Like, I'm your commanding officer. You're going to do what I say. I'm taking on this client. But then once she realizes she's a little bit out of her depth, maybe kind of takes a step back and lets Kathy run the show. So yeah, I had no issue with her. And I think obviously she looks the part as well, you know, the right age and everything like that. I went, I don't have a similar route, but again, a more attractive route is we're trying to get some attractive ladies in here, right? And I went with Emilia Clarke, who most people are going to know her as Daenerys Targaryen in Game of Thrones, but she was also in Solo. She was in that as well. Very attractive young lady. And again, very strong. Obviously, if you saw her as Daenerys, incredibly strong female presence. And so again, I like that idea of her, well, even in Game of Thrones, kind of taking a backseat when she's around stronger figures. And so I think that putting her in that role where she can be the commander early on and saying, you need to try this case, you're going to Cuba, you know, being in charge. And then later in the film kind of saying, all right, I'm going to listen to what Kathy has to say and kind of just be a sidekick. So I liked her in that role, and that's what I went with.
Cool. Yeah, no issues with this at all. I think, great actress, actor, sorry. Fits in, yeah, quite similar to Anna Kendrick, maybe in a lot of ways, you know, quite small, quite petite, but strong in their own way. So I could certainly see her doing that. I don't know if I just had and again, this is probably isn't really a criticism, and I'm sure she could do it. I don't think I went with any British actors for this film. It seems like it seems very American film, which is kind of stupid to say, things say, if you know what I mean, but I just, there was just something about a British actress playing this part I just couldn't see for some reason, but I mean, she could do it, but yeah, just something about her being British just was kind of, I wasn't sure about. But yeah, that's probably just a me thing more than anything else. But yeah, no, I thought she was great. Cool. So let's get to the couple of really kind of meaty parts. They have a big, so Jessup and Kathy obviously have a couple of big meaty head-to-heads in the film. So we'll go to Colonel Nathan Jessup, originally played by Jack Nicholson, who was 55 years old at the time. And again, I mean, like I said before, kind of earlier, it's, you know, you can't, it's an almost impossible one to do. It's a bit like Morgan Freeman from Shawshank Redemption when we did that. It's like, you know, you, no matter who you pick, it's not going to hit Jack Nicholson or hit Morgan Freeman. But, you know, I think there's definitely options there, and I think we've gone for two good ones. So Colonel Jessup is in charge of Guantanamo Bay. Very, very old school, very, very his way or the highway, knows what, thinks he knows best, is high, you know, has a very high opinion of himself, I think, and knows how to play his high position to get what he wants and to undermine other people, which he does kind of a lot in the start of the film, such as, you know, he undermines Markinson, Caffey, Galloway, even Kendrick to a point. He says he says to him, "I'm going to kill you if you don't do this properly," or something to Kiefer Sutherland. So yeah, and he has some of the obviously most iconic lines in the film and film history. So yeah, very tricky part to recast. I went with Josh Brolin, who's 55 years old, and people know from loads of things he's in, he's done so much, but I wrote down here The Goonies, No Country for Old Men, American Gangster, and Deadpool 2. He was obviously Thanos in the Marvel films as well. And so Jack Nicholson has this just amazing ability to play kind of, you don't like him, you kind of laugh at what he says a couple of times, engrossed by him in the film. He just brings out so many emotions in people, and he's just so, so watchable, and the way he chews on the lines. And I just thought, who's an actor that whatever he's in, I always kind of, I'm always drawn to him. My eyes always drawn to him. I always watch him. He can play a variety of things. He can play slightly, not lighthearted, but play things in a slightly light way, but in heavy material. And I just kept on going to Josh Brolin. Sicario is one of my favorite films, and in that film, you're dealing with a lot of kind of difficult, dark subject matter. He's wearing flip flops in it. He's kind of, you know, quipping quite a lot. But again, he's being serious as well. In Inherent Vice, you know, he plays a very serious, straight-laced character, but he's comes out with some of the most hilarious stuff in that. But at the same time, he can be deadly, deadly serious in delivering a line. You can not like him. Milk, he plays a horrible character in that, but plays it so well. So he's a kind of an actor, I think he can do anything. Yeah, that's why I picked him for this. I think if anyone is up to it, he's of the right age. He's 55 years old now as well, same age as Jack Nicholson was at the time. He could play a person in authority, and he can play a person who can undermine. I think him and Brendan Fraser would be a really good kind of like Markinson Jessup thing. You can see him really kind of looming over Brendan Fraser and talking down to him and intimidating people. So yeah, that's why I went with Josh Brolin.
And obviously I would be a hypocrite if I criticized this in any way, because I picked Josh Brolin when we did our initial A Few Good Men cast way back.
Oh,
when.
Did you really? Oh, I didn't realize that. Oh, okay.
Cool. And mainly drawing on him playing Cable in Deadpool 2. I think that he seemed like Jessup. And when I think of Jessup again, intense, intimidating, and that's Josh Brolin as Cable. He's very intense. He's very intimidating. He's reserved. So when he speaks, he means to speak. He doesn't run his mouth. And so I thought he would be the perfect Jessup. So I have no issue with it at all. Since we are talking about a courtroom movie, I will have a quick sidebar on, you'd mentioned that, you know, he's played a bad character in the movie Milk. And I know he kills him at the end, but like, spoiler, it's based on a true story. Look it up. But he kills him at the end. But I felt like he wasn't a bad guy. Like, I felt like he got frustrated because he was under a lot of pressure. He had helped Harvey get a bill passed, and then when he asked Harvey to help him, Harvey wouldn't help him. But I never felt like he was a bad guy. Like, he was never anti-Harvey. He was just, when Harvey decided not to help him after he had helped Harvey, I think he just lost his mind. I didn't think he was a bad guy, though.
Okay, no, fair enough. I suppose I'm just kind of like, yeah, going by the fact he killed him at the end, I suppose. But yeah, no, I mean, I love that film. He played it really well. Yeah, no, okay, yeah, fair enough.
And I know we talked earlier about my Russell Crowe as Markinson, how he's a big star, and, you know, I mean, him playing second fiddle. Well, who better to play second fiddle to than Daniel Day-Lewis, because that's who I went with for my Colonel Jessup. Obviously, does Daniel Day-Lewis need a filmography? We all know who he is. Obviously, Lincoln, There Will Be Blood, Gangs of New York. When we talked about J.T. Walsh being brilliant, Daniel Day-Lewis is the definition of brilliant in every role, and he brings it in every role. And he is intense. Obviously, if you watch Gangs of New York, he's very intense and intimidating. And so that's why I went with for Colonel Jessup. I think that he'd be the perfect kind of whatever, however he chose to play it, it would be the right way.
That's perfect what you just said there. Yeah. The only criticism I had for this is that he's retired from acting. That is the only criticism I could think of. He would be perfect. That's probably the only casting that someone might make if they did remake this, and people would just go, oh, okay, well that's fine then. Yeah, they'd probably be the only person you could cast into that role and be like, you know, yeah, let's go with Daniel Day-Lewis. Yeah, he could do it in any single way. He could do it maybe similar to Jack Nicholson. He could put his own spin on it, and you know you just know that it would be brilliant. So the only criticism I had, and it's, again, it's not for this casting, it's just Russell Crowe as the Markinson one. Yeah, maybe someone else, even if it was Josh Brolin as Markinson and Daniel Day-Lewis as Jessup, I think that would be great. But yeah, no, I think that's who's going to criticize having Daniel Day-Lewis in this film. Great. Okay, so now we're on to final casting. So the lead role was Lieutenant Daniel Caffey, originally played by Tom Cruise, who was 30 years old. Imagine this, having this role at 30 years of age. And he was a bit of a kind of, you know, he was by no means a newcomer anymore at this point. You know, he'd been in the business for, 10 years at this point. So yeah, it was not like a star-making performance, but I think, Wayne, you were completely right in saying that maybe this is the culmination of him as a great actor and him as a movie star. You know, it's he's got that kind of cocky smarminess that carried over from kind of The Color of Money and Cocktail to the, you know, the great acting chops that he demonstrated in kind of Jerry Maguire and Magnolia and Eyes Wide Shut and things like that. So it's a great kind of combination of things in between that, I think, and Brain Man, of course, as well. Tom Cruise played Daniel Caffey. So Daniel Caffey is quite a young hotshot kind of lawyer solicitor. He's a great litigator. He's only been in the Navy for, I think he said, 9 months in the film, but litigated loads of different cases. Is the son of a very famous lawyer, kind of seems like one of those guys who whatever he turns his hand to, he's great at, whether it be softball or practicing law. Very kind of cocky but kind of likable at the same time, and yeah, it's kind of where I think we're a little bit worried about being shown up in the courtroom, needs a bit of pushing from people to take the case and to get in there. Has a lot of head-to-head moments with Kevin Bacon's character, Joe Galloway, Demi Moore's character, Dawson, and obviously Colonel Jessup as well. A lot of different things that the character has to do and the actor who playing the character has to do in the film. So I went with, and I promise you this wasn't a response because you picked this one first. I had your picks through first, Wayne. So this wasn't a response to your pick, I promise. So I picked Miles Teller for this one. Who better to play a role made famous by Tom Cruise than the kind of the actor that he kind of maybe handpicked himself to be the new Tom Cruise, possibly, in the Top Gun Maverick films. So Miles Teller, 36 years old. He's famous from Whiplash, the second Fantastic Four that was made. Bleed for this, where he plays a boxer in, and obviously Top Gun Maverick, where he plays Rooster. I think Miles Teller is one of those actors who's very similar, who can kind of do anything. He's obviously a great dramatic actor from Whiplash. Can add a bit of kind of lightheartedness and comedy chops in there as well. A couple of kind of comedic lines and kind of one-liners in Top Gun Maverick. Has that kind of cocky swagger to him again in Maverick as well. And I think I could just see him kind of going head-to-head with all of the other actors in the film, having good chemistry with Anna Kendrick. I think I could just kind of see him doing the role. So I think Top Gun Maverick was a real kind of good good showing for him that he could play a kind of Tom Cruise type in anything else, really. So yeah, that's why I went for Miles Teller in that role.
See, and I like Miles Teller as an actor. I think everything I've seen him in, he's fantastic. And whether it's War Dogs or, you know, like you said, Whiplash, you know, Top Gun, Bleed for This is great. You know, I think there's so many good movies that he's in. My only criticism of it is that Caffey's character tends to be, I don't know, very like dismissive of, I guess, anything serious. Like everything's a game to him. Whether it's softball, playing in the courtroom is a game to him. Like he's just out there having fun. You know, he does get a little bit more serious towards the end, but that's why they gave him Weinberg, because they needed somebody to kind of rein him in when he starts to kind of drift off. And for me, Miles Teller, in all the roles that I've seen him in, tends to be really serious. Like I haven't seen that playful side of him. You know, he's always, even Whiplash, he's a college student, but he's very serious. He breaks up with his girlfriend. He's like, you know, drumming is more important than you. You know, I'm like, he's just uber ultra serious guy. And so I would have liked to have seen somebody a little bit more playful, I guess, in the role. I mean, great actor. Obviously, he could do it, but I haven't seen him play that kind of role.
With you. Okay.
And with me, again, sticking with Top Gun Maverick, I went with Glenn Powell, who plays Hangman in Top Gun Maverick. Kind of the Iceman role to Maverick's, to Miles Teller's Maverick role. And what, again, I liked about him is that he does kind of play a little bit more of a flippant kind of guy where he's not super serious. He is very high on himself, very cocky, jokes around a lot about how everyone else is beneath him and things like that. He's a good looking guy. He's very charming. Everything I've seen him in, he's got a real distinct charm about him, which is something that Tom Cruise does as well. And obviously there's no other Tom Cruise. It's very difficult, like you said, with Nicholson too. But for me, Glenn Powell has that fun playfulness, but can be serious when he has to be. And so I liked him more for that early Caffey role.
Got it. Okay. I think we're both just kind of on the opposite ends here with each other. I think that Miles Teller is a great dramatic actor, but can have those lighthearted moments as well. I've only seen Glenn Powell in Top Gun Maverick. I haven't seen him in anything else apart from Dark Knight Rises, apparently, which I didn't even realize he was in. He plays a very small part in that,
like henchman number two.
Yeah, right. but yeah, I don't know. I just kind of based on the way he played Hangman in Top Gun Maverick. I don't know. I just couldn't see just a little bit too much, if you know what I mean. Just it's Daniel Caffey plus, you know, to kind of, you know, a bit on steroids. Again, as you say, a great looking guy, got the cockiness, got the smarminess, can definitely see it. But yeah, maybe just a little bit too much there. And again, I haven't seen enough of him actor wise to know how good an actor he is in terms of doing all the different things that the Daniel Caffey character has to do. But yeah, I did want to say, when I had yours come through and it was Glenn Powell, I did laugh because I'm like, I'm probably going to go for Miles Teller with mine. He's going to think I'm just doing a Top Gun Maverick thing here. I can kind of see where you're coming from. But yeah, I just gave the nod to Miles Teller there. Awesome. Okay, so yeah, kind of got through that pretty swiftly. We'll do a similar thing as Wayne used to do, maybe just see if we can get everything up on Twitter and stuff, and people can vote on who they think maybe had the better recast there. I think it's probably pretty close. I think we're pretty kind of, you know, positive on most of our choices. There's none of yours that I hated or didn't think fit in at all. So hopefully you felt the same way about mine, I think.
Yeah, for sure. And I think what you'll find too is whenever I used to put it up for a vote, it was always funny because you would get those people more often than not who would be like, well, I like three of Wayne's and three of Jesse's, yeah. So I don't know.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. Yeah, just maybe going for one that you thought was the best one, or just who had the better Caffey at the end or something. Yeah, definitely. So yeah, I'll try and do that. I suppose just before we go, did you have any other kind of almost picks, people that you almost went for some of the characters?
Not a lot. I will say, like I said, I thought of Josh Brolin as Jessup because I had picked him earlier, and the only reason I didn't pick him here was because I had picked him earlier. And actually, DDL was my backup, or my almost, so I just swapped it around. And yeah. I actually thought about Miles Teller as Caffey, which is what led me to Glenn Powell, because my first thought when I thought Caffey, Tom Cruise, the first thing I think of is Miles Teller when I think of Tom Cruise.
Yep.
But then I started thinking about it, and I started thinking about the seriousness. And then that kind of led me to Glenn Powell. I'm like, oh, he's a little bit more fun. I'm going to go with him.
Got it. Yeah, yeah. No, I can see that, definitely. Yeah. Cool. Yeah. For me, again, yeah, I didn't have a whole lot more. Jessup, I did think J.K. Simmons at one point. I thought kind of get the Whiplash band together, back together again. That him and Miles Teller obviously have good chemistry. I think J.K. Simmons could play that part really well. Yeah, I think just when I thought about Josh Brolin, I think he just kind of fit just a little bit better. We were talking about obviously maybe changing genders and stuff. So again, I did actually put some serious thought into changing the Weinberg and the Kathy roles to female roles and making the Joe Galloway character a female. No, sorry, I've got that completely wrong. Making the Kathy role female, and the Joe role male. Sorry, that's what I meant to say. So for that, I had Anna Kendrick for Kathy, Lakeith Stanfield for the Joe Galloway part, and add Hilary Swank for the Weinberg role, just because she doesn't do anything nowadays. She's a great actress. She's like a double Oscar winner. You can maybe think that she might be like a good female Jessup, but she's just not in anything. I think she's just of an age now where she'd be kind of a good like support to kind of Anna Kendrick's character. You know, she could play a little bit quiet, a bit like she did in Insomnia, I suppose. So yeah, but I couldn't quite make that fit really and work properly. So yeah, that's kind of why I went with what I did. Cool. Thank you.
If I played that game too, I'd say Wayne, if you had to pick a female Kathy, who would you go with? I would go with Alexandra Daddario.
Sorry, who's that? What is she from?
So she was in True Detective. She's in the Percy Jackson movies. She plays Athena's daughter, whatever it is.
Got it.
Very pretty girl, but she's very intense. So I like that Tom Cruise intenseness.
Got it. Okay, cool. Yeah, no, I know what you mean. Awesome. Okay, well, Wayne, thank you so much for coming on. So obviously you've got if you just kind of give us a reminder of your YouTube channel with the Patriots, that would be great.
Yeah, definitely. Patriots End Zone, which is at Patriots EZ. On Twitter, same thing, at Patriots EZ as an end zone.
Awesome. Awesome. And what was the you mentioned, sorry, you're doing some blogs as well. What was that website?
So that would be musketfire.com, which is again a Patriots blog site. Or if you follow me on Twitter at Patriots EZ, I post all of the articles in there as well.
Amazing. Cool, man. I was glad to hear you doing so well and kind of doing some stuff that you love, obviously. You were doing films and now doing kind of American football with the Patriots especially. So yeah, good stuff, man. And I hope you can get back into Recast 2.0. I completely understand where you're coming from in terms of dedicating the time to it, but so yeah, I completely understand why you maybe give it a bit of a break. But if you can start again, that would be awesome. And hopefully if I can continue as well myself, and maybe in another few months or next year sometime, I could have you back on to talk about something else.
Yeah, sounds like a plan.
Awesome. Okay, well, thank you very much, man. Take care.
Thanks.
Take care. Thanks.
Thank you very much for listening to this latest episode of For Me, These Films Are the Juice. As I mentioned towards the end of the episode, I am going to put a post on Twitter where you can vote for your favourite cast, either mine or Wing G's. And look forward to receiving some votes for that one. And I will confirm who the winner was on the next episode. As I mentioned in the introduction, I won't promise any particular episodes coming up next, but please be assured that there will be some more coming throughout this year and hopefully into next year as well. Thank you so much again for listening. If you aren't doing so already, please follow me on Twitter. It's at Films Are the Juice, and the R is the letter R. So at Films Are the Juice on Twitter. And I also have an Instagram page and a Facebook page, which are the names of the podcast itself. So if you could follow me on those social media platforms, that would be greatly appreciated. And I do post stuff on there as regularly as I can to keep people up to date with episodes that are coming up, episodes from some of my other podcast buddies. Please do keep an eye on there. But once more, thank you so much for listening to this episode, and keep on trucking. Speak to you soon.